also an extremely fragile one. There's already been an ugly backlash to Obama's presidency. We record hate crimes at the Southern Poverty Law Center, and we have seen so many inspired by anger towards Obama. The Secret Service reports that there have been more death threats or suspicious activity with respect to Obama than any previous president. David Duke, one of the godfathers of the hate movement, and himself once a candidate for president, says Obama is a visual aid for white people. What he means by that is Obama symbolizes that their country has been taken from them. In Duke's view, it's been taken by Jews and given to kind of persons who are not worthy. And I must say, and I don't know if this, Lou Alvarez said, keep it nonpartisan, but I must say that I do think that having crazed people on Fox TV call the president a fascist is not something that's helping very much. At the same time, this backlash against Obama is occurring at a time on the heels, really, of an incredible increase in the number of hate groups in our country. Since the year 2000, the number of hate groups in the United States has grown by about 50%, going from about 600 to over 900. Two big factors, I would say, are causing this. The changing demographics in the country and the furor over immigration. In 1970, about 17%, or less than one in five persons in this country, was non-white. Today, that figure has doubled. And there are a lot of people, or some people, who are threatened by the change. We see it in the growth of hate groups. We also see it, most recently, in the rise in anti-Latino hate crimes. This has been a tremendous spike in just a few years. We had a case recently that illustrated this problem. This was the defendant. His name was Ron Edwards. He was the head of the Imperial Clans of America. He was the kind of person, or he is the kind of person, who didn't leave much to the imagination when it came to talking about what his views were. Our client in the case was a young man named Jordan Gruber. Jordan was born in Bismarck, North Dakota. He was the son of a Native American from Panama and the son of a white woman from Kentucky. His lineage is actually similar to Obama's. On a summer night in 2006, Jordan was at a county fair in Brandenburg, Kentucky, with his friends and his brother. These two men were also there. They were recruiting for Edwards' Klan group. I'm not sure, the person on, I guess that would be your right. No, that would be your left. My right, your left. The person on your left is Jared Hensley. That word across his chest is murder. He has the words violence tattooed to his knuckles. They were intoxicated with alcohol. They were intoxicated with hate. They had recently been at another festival on Edwards' property. They saw Jordan. To these men, Jordan was, to use their words, nothing more than an illegal spick. They attacked him, beat him to the ground, kicked him with steel-toed boots. And when the police came to arrest them, they said, "What are you doing? He's the illegal one. He's the one who should be arrested." Edwards, the person we had sued, was not at the fair. He didn't even know that his people were there recruiting. But I remembered torts class from G.E. White's day, and I knew that there were these agency principles that might be helpful. Reckless selection of an agent, this guy was out there, they were out there trying to recruit. We could cobble something together, I felt sure. So we filed a complaint, not just against the two Klansmen, but against Edwards himself and his organization. And immediately, as soon as we filed the complaint, the net started buzzing, you know, with kind of threats kind of towards us. And unfortunately, in our line of work, we have to take these kinds of threats seriously, because a Klansman one time, upset over one of our cases, torched our building. And since that time, about 30 people have gone to jail in connection with various plots to shoot us, blow the building up, and whatnot. Edwards, the Klan leader who I told you about before, was actually behind one of the plots to assassinate my colleague. But it was foiled in advance, and Edwards escaped indictment because the person who he put up for the job refused to talk to the FBI. So, and I can tell you from my own experience that Edwards' feelings about us had not softened by the time of trial. That's what he had tattooed his feelings about us to his head. And I sat there, and you know, I've seen a lot of things in my legal career, some courtesy of my serial killer clients, some courtesy of other things. But I have never seen someone as determined as that. They talk about wearing your feelings on your sleeve, but this one has got to take the cake. And after, this was, and in November, we got a tremendous jury verdict, and I was really tempted to come up to the guy and say, you know something, you should get that tattoo to the other side of your head. You know, the reality is that most of the people who commit hate crimes in our country don't look like these men. They don't walk around with swastikas tattooed to their chest or violence tattooed to their knuckles. Instead, they look like these kids. These are five young men, high school students, from Suffolk County, Long Island. One day, they decided to go what they called beaner jumping. Beaner jumping was a term for bored teenagers, of going to hunt Mexicans. And this is the person they found, Marcelo Lucero, a legal immigrant from Ecuador. They chased him, cornered him in an alley, surrounded him, and stabbed him to death. I look at these people, and I, to be honest, I can't help but feel sorry for them. If you could see the picture in the, a little better, the kid in the middle, you can tell, has been like rubbing his nose, and you know he's been crying, and you know his life is ruined, and of course Marcelo Lucero is dead, and these people probably were not followers of Klansmen like Ron Edwards. Instead, they were probably viewers of Lou Dobbs, the CNN commentator who gives kind of America a daily dose of anti-immigrant rhetoric. Now, the problem with Mr. Dobbs isn't that he's opposed to illegal immigration. The problem is that he'll say anything to prove his point. And there's no jury there, other than the television viewers to cut it on or off, to call him on these things. We had a big dispute with the guy a couple years ago over these outrageous claims that he was making about leprosy. Quoting a well-known white supremacist, he said there have been 7,000 new cases of leprosy in 3 years. And while he's saying this, he's showing pictures of people jumping over a fence. We all know where these cases are coming from. And, of course, the figure 7,000 was right. It just happened to be over 30 years. And the reality is that the number of cases in recent years had been a third of what the cases had been in 10 years earlier. But that didn't make any difference to Lou Dobbs. And frankly, it didn't make any difference to CNN. We wrote letters, published letters, open letters in the New York Times asking them to retract it because it was so obviously false. They wouldn't. I guess Lou has ratings. Lou has admirers in strange places, let me say. This is Stormfront. This is the leading neo-Nazi website out there. And they have about 160,000 registered users and about 50,000 unique visitors every day. Lou Dobbs for president. posted by a Klansman. Now, I want to be fair to Lou. You cannot help in this country who admires you. You can't help it. On the other hand, when people start calling for your election to the presidency on white supremacist websites, you ought to examine what it is that you're thinking about. Now, there's another factor at work now that is adding fuel to the nativist fire, and that's, of course, the economy, the collapse of the economy. I showed you that line of the growth of hate groups. My guess is most of you are more familiar with this line. And in the class of 79, we all hope that we live long enough to have our 401k plans recover from what's happened lately. I'm sorry for you, Dean, but I'm more sorry for my kids, really. Any event. But frankly, this line doesn't begin to talk about the true dimensions of the problems that we're facing. Look at this headline from December. U.S. loses 533 jobs in biggest drop since 1974. And you know what? The news has only gotten worse since then. This is the latest headline from the March figures. 663 jobs lost in March. Total tops 5 million. These figures are just incredible. We're extremely privileged people, but the reality is that people in America are hurting. There is one group, though, I would say, that sees a silver lining in what's going on, and that is, and those are, the peddlers of hate. That is Jeff Shoup, the head of the National Socialist Movement, the largest hate group in America. Historically, when times get tough in our nation, that's how a movement like ours gain a foothold. When the economy suffers, people are looking for answers. We are the answer for white people. Now look, the danger is not that millions of Americans are going to join hate groups. The National Socialist Movement can march in Washington all it wants, but it's never going to attract the numbers that the Klan attracted during the nativist rage in the 20s. Still, I would say there is a real danger here, and one that I think many of us may not recognize. A study was published recently by a famous Harvard sociologist, Robert Putnam. Some of you may be familiar with it. And Putnam looked at survey data about the level of trust in different communities across the country. And then he plotted what he found about the level of trust that he found in those communities against the level of diversity in those communities. And this is what he found. As diversity goes up, trust goes down. Homogeneous Bismarck, North Dakota, where my client, Jordan Groover, was born, is a much more trusting place than diverse San Francisco. And when we're talking about levels of trust, we're not simply talking about trusting people who are different from us. Trust goes down among people who are the same, people who are similar to us as well. Diversity tends to foster social isolation and kind of a disengagement from life. In diverse communities, people tend to volunteer less, to have less faith in their leaders, and to be pessimistic about the prospects for positive change. That in my mind, is why Obama's election is so important. Americans are optimistic about Obama and believe, for the first time in our history, that race relations are generally good. We have, therefore, a unique opportunity to overcome the social isolation that diversity fosters, to build that sense of social solidarity that we must build, if we are to address the scars of our racial history that still haunt us. It's an important opportunity that we, as lawyers, have a special obligation not to squander. Because, as Dr. King said from the Lincoln Memorial. We must not be satisfied until justice rolls down like waters and righteousness like a mighty stream. Thank you.